Good morning. So last time we talked about object files. So these were an intermediate step we saw in making executables, where we took our assembly and we didn't turn it directly into an executable generally. We first converted it to this object file, which we combined with other object files to make our executable. So what's that for? And we saw that the object file, well, ideally we just, you know, have all our machine code and data, we put that into our executable and we'd be done. But we couldn't quite make that work because the assembly files we have are not complete. They're missing some addresses that we need, and we also, when we combine them with other assembly files and figure out how the executable's laid out. So the object files basically have the machine code and data plus annotations to let us know what things, you know, are still incomplete that we might need to fix up to make the executable when we figure out exactly how everything's laid out. And also, if there are other files that use this, like if something needs to call main, or if this file contains a function that some other file calls, where is that so I can fill that file in when I'm making the executable? We also talked a bit about C and pointer arithmetic and arrays. We mentioned that the array indexing operator in C takes the array and adds something to it, and then dereferences that. And why does that work? Well, arrays become pointers to their first elements, and when we add to a pointer in C, it advances the pointer by this that many, the size of the thing pointed to. So this means when I add 2 to a pointer to an int, it's probably going to advance by 8 in our systems because ints are 4 bytes, and the compiler takes care of that. It's not that the assembly is, you know, adding 2, the assembly is going to actually add 8, and the compiler is going to know to do that because it knows you made a pointer to an int, so adding 2 turns into adding 8 in assembly. We talked briefly about in C typedef struct. So structs in C don't follow the same sort of type naming that you expect in C++. So if I do struct x, I can't use x as a type in C, unlike C++. So commonly you'll see typedef used to work around it that has some weird. Finally, we mentioned this idea of undefined behavior. So unlike a lot of other languages you've probably used, there is lots of implementations of C, and we have this agreement about what counts as C because we have this specification. And this specification has some places where they deliberately said, oh, we don't care what compilers do. And compilers take a surprising amount of advantage of this. We saw an example where we had, you know, two pieces of code where the same compiler, depending on how you optimize, would make it do very different things. And an example of where we can have this undefined behavior we showed there was signed integer overflow. There's also a bunch of others. And this is a way where you could kind of have this get in trouble where, you know, we said at the beginning, we're using C because there is a straightforward translation to assembly, but compilers don't do it. This is a real big example of how compilers might not do that straightforward translation. So they might, you know, take advantage of some things, just not being really specified. They're not going to just do what the straightforward translation to assembly would do. They might do other things in practice, even though that maybe, you know, isn't the most convenient for most programmers. So questions about things we covered last time? No questions, everyone's. Okay, so based on the quiz results, I felt like I should go over questions 2 and 3 on the quiz. So question 2 on the quiz had this piece of code and asked what the condition codes were afterwards after this finished. Now, for this to finish, we need to get past this JLE. And this JLE is basically checking if the last result is less than or equal to 0, go to start. So to get past it, we need it to be the case that last result is strictly greater than 0. And so our condition codes are going to reflect that. And they're going to happen to have been set by this compare, because that's the last thing that would have set them. But for last result to be greater than 0, we know from the question there's no overflow, so we just need to worry about the sign flag and the zero flag. And the zero flag is 1 if and only if the last result was 0. Well, it's when it's strictly greater, can't be. The sine flag is 1 if and only if the last result is negative. Strictly greater than 0, can't be. So questions about how I figured that out? Okay. And the other part of the quiz was question 3, was asking to translate this back to assembly. So we have this compare, which compares R9 to R10, and that is doing a subtract of R9 and R10, but without changing R10. Remember, subtract is subtract from, so this is computing R10 minus R9, and then our jump less than equal is taking that last result, saying is it less than or equal to 0? So if it's less than or equal to 0, we're going to start. So we can fit this into a more traditional C loop using the do while pattern. So while this is true, we go back to the start. So it's do while 10 minus R10 minus R9 is less than or equal to 0. Or we can do some algebra and get R10 is less than or equal to R9. Questions about how I figured that out? All comfortable. Other questions about things on the quiz? I don't tend to talk about any of the other questions, assuming no one is confused. Yeah?
Question one,
okay. So, a question one was saying, when we wanted to do this C statement, so we're taking x, multiplying it by 2, which is the same as x plus x, and setting P to reference to it. So if P is, say, 10,000, I want to set memory at 10,000. And I think most people, the biggest point of confusion seemed to be A and B people wanted to choose when they don't work. So let's talk about what A does. So A sets that memory value to X, which is 3, and then we take the memory address and multiply it by 2, which isn't something we wanted to do. B, we take x, multiply it by 2, but we replace the address rather than replacing the actual value, and then we've lost the original memory address. We will never change it, so it can't be equivalent to the original C code. Does that answer your question? Go over things. Other questions? Yes?
On the slide previously, there was like a comment for R, yes.
A question is, could I have also written this as, so what about writing it this way? So this is another way of writing the same thing. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah. The one that actually works, that I did not put on my slide. So I'll need to pull it up. So the one that actually works was RxRxR9. Okay, used a temporary register. So we did LEA, RAX, RAX to R9. And this is going to compute RAX plus RAX and put it in R9. So this is just R9 gets RAX plus RAX. And the way we can think of this is R9 is sort of the address of memory at RAX plus RAX, right? We think of LEA as sort of a direct, as a, like an address of operator of its first operand. So it's just doing RAX plus RAX, which is 2 times x. So that, and then the next step was taking this R9 and putting it in star P using the most straightforward move instruction for that, where we have parentheses around R8 to do the equivalent of dereferencing P assembly. Yes? Oh, question, why when I have 2 registers, I add them, when there's a register or number, I multiply it. These are just the the rules of the syntax, unfortunately. So remember, the general syntax is BI is displacement base index scale. And basically, in one form, we're omitting the scale. In the other form, we're omitting the base. And it turns out that the syntax lets you omit the commas in both cases.
Is there a way to do it where you have a register and then add a constant to it, or is it always
register? Question, is there a way to do it if you have a register and add a constant? If you want to add a constant, it has to be this value in front of the parentheses. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Question, does the scale always have to be constant? Yes.
So it cannot be like a...
So the scale, yeah, so if there's a number in the parentheses, it must be a scale because, a constant, I should say, in the parentheses, it must be a scale because no other constant is allowed there. Yeah.
Are only a certain number of values available for that constant, like 1, 2, 4, 8?
Question, only certain values available for constant? Yes, like 1, 2, 4, 8? Yes. So other ones just won't assemble. Other questions? Okay, so today we're going to talk about manipulating bits, and we're going to talk a bit about how it works in hardware, and how that contrasts with software, and how hardware can help software out. So in hardware, sort of a typical way we might represent bits is we'll have wires that hold bits. We'll hold bits. One way we can do that is by saying a high voltage is 1, a low voltage is 0, not the only way. And if we want to have more than a bit, we can have a bunch of these wires together, so here I have 8 of them, to hold a byte. And this is how we can move numbers around in a computer, one way we can do that. And if I have numbers in this sort of format, where I have just a bunch of wires holding their bits, some operations are really easy. So for example, maybe I want to get the 7 out of 0x72. So if I have it on these wires, that's really easy. I don't have to actually do any real work. I just look at the top 4 wires. There it is. I have that part of the number. And starting with this operation, because, well, it's actually a little trickier to do in software. So I have this problem where I have a 2-digit hexadecimal number, OXAB, so a byte, and I want to extract the top nibble, the top hexadecimal digit, we'll call those nibbles, which is OXA, and what's the C code for this? And you can all do this. You don't need any special operators. You can do this with math. So what is some C code that will do this with math? And something which might help is if we think of XAB, we have a 1's place and a 16's place, and a way we could write this number out is we could do that this is OXA, which is 10, times 16 to the 1, plus OXB, which is 11, times 16 to the 0. It's just a way, that's how hexadecimal works, but thinking of that representation might be helpful. Answer or question?
Yeah, answer. I think you do value mod 16.
So you want to do value mod 16. Okay, so let's think of how that works. So that would be, we'd be dividing this by 16, and what would we get? So we get something and a remainder and something. Okay, so our, so what's going to happen when we divide by 16 is that this part here is going to not divide at all, and that's going to be our remainder. So our remainder is going to be 11, and this part here, well, that's going to divide evenly by 16 because we'll just cancel. I should do this in probably not code. We'll cross this out and get 16 to the 0. To the 0, not 160. To the 1 when we're dividing by 16. All right, 16 divided by 16, so we'll get 10 here, which is not, so the remainder actually isn't what we want. We wanted OXA, so the remainder actually gave us the bottom digit, the bottom bit. Yeah, so people want to say something? Yes. So the question, does the just integer divide it? Yes, so it happens that we have the right thing we want here. So the result of the division of just the division without the remainder is going to give us the right thing. And in C, we can just write that as divide operator is does division without a remainder. Okay, so questions about why that works? So that's dividing by 16. That's a solution to this. And this is similar to how we can do the same thing with decimal by dividing by 10, right? Remove the bottom digit if we don't take a remainder. So this is a way of doing it. And it works. But if we could think of what the hardware was doing, so the hardware, this was kind of free. We just had the value, we had this value available without doing any work. We just look at the right wires and it's there. In software, this is actually seems really slow. So there's a division instruction in x86. On the Skylake architecture, which is basically what my laptop is, division for integers takes around 6 cycles. And well, a clock cycle is like, it's really small, slower. It's like nanoseconds. But less than nanoseconds, because, you know, multiple gigahertz. But if we compare this to other operations, it's really slow. So addition, for example, the same processor can do 4 additions per cycle. So this division is 24 times slower than addition, which seems a lot more complicated. If I'm doing addition by hand, that's a lot of work. And seems really inefficient. And in the hardware, it seems like it should be way faster. And you might say, so why isn't it? Well, the problem is that the divide operator, it needs to do things that are pretty complicated. Like if I'm dividing by 7, it's not simple. Like it makes sense it takes a lot of time. But this particular division happens to be a lot simpler. So can we expose that to the software? And the answer is yes. So there's an instruction that exposes it. And in this example, we're going to shift by 4 called shift right. So what it does is it takes a number, moves its bits over by a certain amount. So in this case, I'm moving the 4 bits over to the right. And that happens to get rid of the bottom 4 bits, which is what we were trying to do. We're trying to get rid of that bottom nibble, move it out. Now, this operation works on registers. And I can't actually take a register and remove the bottom 4 bits because I still need the register to have the same size. The register is, you know, going to be 32 or 64 bits. It's going to stay that size. It's not going to change. So I have to put something in the other bits. And this instruction, we have to make a choice, puts in zeros. Just because I have to put something there, can't leave it blank. There's no such thing as the register now only has 28 bits. Can't do that. It started as 32 bits, it stays as 32 bits. Questions about our shift right operator? Or instruction, I should say. Okay, so that's our shift right instruction. And I can use that to implement our get top nibble and not do an actual division. And you might say, okay, so we've managed to avoid doing an actual division, but I had to write assembly to do this. Can I do this in C? And the answer is going to be yes. Yes, you can. That we can write it as this greater than operator that you may know as the CN insertion operator, also used for this right shift operation. And you can see our assembly code here is just we do this move to move the argument into EAX, adding, turning it from 8 to 32 bits, and then shifting to 32 bits. Yes? Question, does that 4 mean 4 bytes? So this 4 means by 4 bits. Other questions? Question, what is move ZBL? So this is moving from DIL, which is the bottom, the least significant 8 bits of RDI, into EAX. But to do that, they're different sizes, so you can figure out what to do with the extra bits. So this version of move has a Z for 0, so it puts zeros in those bits. Does that answer your question? Yeah. The question is, will the compiler automatically do that? And the answer is, at least sometimes. So here I compiled both of these with an optimizing compiler, and compiler generated the same code. In this case, it chose to shift a byte value and then move it into a larger value. But it did the same thing for both. It figured out, wait a moment, these are the same thing. Let's not actually do division because that would be really slow. So yes, you probably don't need to tell the compiler to do this, though we might have some caveats on that later. Yeah?
So this is just also an easier way to divide by multiples of 2?
Question, this is also an easier way to divide by multiples of 2? Yes. Okay. So if we're thinking of it as math, our right shift, is going to be the same as dividing by a multiple of 2, in this case I wrote that as multiplying by 2 to the negative, some negative power, and rounding down, hence the floor operator. Some questions? About our shift right. Okay, so we've seen shift right. So here's some. Assembly code, so I have an assembly function here. I copy from the first argument into EAX, and then I shift EAX right by 4 with that instruction I showed you earlier. My question is, if I declare this as an int foo returning int, taking an int argument returning int, and I pass negative 2, what do I get? Give you a minute, you can check neighbors. And this is a part of the class where, yes, you will need to know 2's complement from 2150, which I know some of you wanted to not have to deal with again. But it comes up because we're using it. That's how our computers work. Okay, who'd like some more time? A few people. Okay, so. See, so who thinks our answer is A, B, C, a few people, D, E, F, G, H. Okay, so most people figured out that we get a large positive number. Let's talk about what's going on. So for this, we need to know 2's complement. So a bunch of ways of remembering 2's complement. So one way we can define 2's complement is we can say, well, we have a 1's place, a 2's place, a 4's place, and so on. And in 2's complement, rather than having our top bit's place, we have negative that. So with 32-bit numbers, we have a 2 to the 30th place, but it's followed by a negative 2 to the 31st place. This is one way of representing 2's complement. Another way we can think about it is we have like this circle of numbers in 2's complement, where going around this circle, I just add 1 going in this direction. And when I add 1 from the most positive number, I get the most negative number. And when I add 1 from negative 1, I get 0. And if we work out what the bit patterns for this have to be based on 0 being all zeros, we say, oh, if 0 is all zeros, and I add 1 to something and get 0, it has to be all 1s. And similarly, if I take the most positive number that we have, which you choose to be 2 to the 31 minus 1, I add 1, I get the most negative number, so the most positive number is 0 and all 1s, I have 1 and all zeros. And another way you may have remembered 2's complement is sort of the procedure for computing minus x, which is flip all bits in x and add 1. So applying this to our problem here, we can say negative 2, well, is 2, which is all zeros and 1. Flip all the bits, so we get all 1s, 1, 0, 1. We add 1 to that. We have 1 plus 1 in binary is 1, 0. Carry the 1. And so we get all 1s and a 0. We shift that over by 1. So that shift operation gets rid of the 0 and adds in a 0, because that's how the SHR operator worked. So we end up with not only a large positive number, but exactly this large positive number, the most positive number. So questions on how I figured that out? Yes? So the question is, the argument was negative 2, so I started by expressing as positive 2. So here, I was just figuring out how I write negative 2 in binary. So the actual argument would have been, so the actual value here was the negative, the bit pattern for negative 2. Does that answer your question? So I wanted to write positive 2 in binary, I did that here. But I needed to figure out what negative 2 was in order to know what the shift operation does on negative 2. So I did the 2's complement just for the purpose of figuring out what happened before this function was called. Does that answer your question? Yeah, so the 2's complement work I was showing was something that happened before all this assembly code ran. Other questions? Yeah.
So what would happen if you like shift right by one bit, like shift negative 1, the 2's complement, the certain bit representation of negative 1 to right by 1?
So question is, what would happen if I shifted negative 1 right by 1? So we saw that when we shifted 2, we got rid of this 0 at the end. And in negative 1, we have a 1 there, we get rid of it, we get the same results.
But you don't have.
And we'd have a 0 in the front, because that's what our shift right operator does. Shift right instruction does. Add zeros. Doesn't matter what we're getting rid of. So we get the same result with negative 1. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
So,
The question is, this assembly code's working on EAX, what's happening to the rest of the bits of RAX that aren't in EAX? And they're gonna be all zeros because of our rule that when we set EAX, it sets the rest of REX to zero. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions?
Did you say that the answer of shifting one bit of the left in one is the same answer as this one?
The question that I said is that if we shift a negative one by one, we got the same answer? Yes.
As shifting
negative two? Yes. Question: Does the bit shift also clear the upper bits of REX? Yes, because it's writing EX. Other questions? Okay. So here we saw a case where maybe it's not so great for dividing by a power of two, and how could we fix that? So one way of thinking about it is, how would I use the shift operator to actually divide by a power of 2. And a way I could do that is I could say, well, I'm starting with a negative number, and we get the corresponding positive number by flipping all the bits and add 1. I'm going to do my shift, and then I'm going to turn it back into a negative number by dividing. And something we can notice here is that if I get rid of some operations which are maybe rounding errors, so if I like get rid of the add 1 and get rid of the add 1, I'm flipping the bits, shifting, flipping the bits. And that's going to be the same as shifting, except for the new bits we shift in, the new zeros at the beginning. So except for some rounding, this is the same as if we did the shift, actually dividing is the same as doing the shifting, but if we shifted in ones for negative numbers instead of zeros. So the rounding is different because we have these adding one operations I'm ignoring, but if we ignore the add one operations, it's the same. The shifting works for dividing negative numbers, except for some rounding, but we have to shift in ones instead of zeros. And that's a useful thing, and it's useful enough that x86 has an instruction to do it. So there's instruction called SAR for arithmetic shift right, which if we pass in a negative number, it shifts in ones. If we pass in a positive number, it shifts in zeros, instead of always putting zeros in the new bits. And that's precisely because it's more convenient for, you know, simulating division for sign numbers. So questions on this SAR instruction? Yeah.
So basically, do like a division if it's negative or positive?
So the question is basically, does a division if it's negative or positive? Yes, something like that. And we're doing it mechanically by doing the bit shifting and being careful about what we put in the new bits on the top. And we're just copying the sign bit, is what I'm showing here, because the sign bit is one if it's negative, zero otherwise. Okay. Other questions? So you might say, how do I access this in C? And the answer is that, well, if you take a sign number and do the shift, you'll get SAR, which is called an arithmetic shift. If you take the unsigned number and do a shift, you get SHR, which is called a logical shift. So the C compiler will choose which one to use based on whether you're using signed or unsigned numbers. So this is a case where the compiler needs to know if it's signed or unsigned to generate the right instruction. And we haven't seen that very much, because usually when we're adding or subtracting, it doesn't matter if they're signed or unsigned, but here it does. Okay, so questions about compiler choosing these? Okay, and I'm actually, to be very precise here, I'm kind of not quite telling the truth when I say this is how it works in C. So unsigned works this way. Signed is technically implementation defined, meaning that the C specification, they decided we don't actually want to write down how shifting sign numbers works. But they did say the compiler has to choose. It can't just like change it willy-nilly. It's not like undefined behavior. But every compiler for x86 I know of, and pretty much all compilers I've seen, do an arithmetic shift. The only case where I'd imagine you might not is if you're unlucky enough to have a platform that doesn't have a convenient way of doing it in assembly, which is very uncommon. And we'll assume that sign shifts are arithmetic in this class just because that's almost always the case. Another thing to note about shifts in C is that the way I describe shifts suggests that if I like do, you know, long x equals something and set y equal to x shifted by 100, that I will get probably, or I guess I should do, make it extra clear, let's say unsigned long. So we're always shifting in zeros, right? You'd expect me to get zero. That is actually undefined behavior. So that's a case where the compiler can do anything. You might say, why is that the case? And probably the motivation for it is that in x86 assembly and many other platforms, the shift instruction itself only uses the lower bit of the shift amount. So if you use an SHR instruction with 100, it's going to look at the bottom 5 bits of 100 to decide how much to shift. So it might shift by a lot less. And rather than having the compiler deal with that, the C standard people said, oh, do whatever you want. And the compiler may take advantage of that. So don't shift by more than the width of something, even though it seems like it should like give you zero. Sorry, doesn't work that way. So questions about C standard stuff with shifts? Yes?
So going back to shifting is actually one thing. If you're using an arithmetic shift, is it going to have like a 1 coming if you shift right?
So the question, if I arithmetic shift -1, will I get -1 for a right shift? Yes.
But for a logical one, then it's going to...
For a logical shift, I will not, yes. Other questions? Okay, so speaking of results of shifting, should remember to clear these slides before. Okay, so here's an exercise we have. I have shift 2, I'm using an operator, so we know this is going to turn into an SAR. So an arithmetic shift, this is arithmetic. So it's going to copy the sign bit. And I'm calling it with -6. I wanted to figure out what the result is, and I'll do the work of let's convert -6 to 2's complement binary representation, since you'll probably want to do that at some point. So we have 6, which is going to be equal to a bunch of zeros and a 110. And then to convert it to 2's complement, I flip all the bits. 1, add 1, so I get 0, 1, 0, 1, a bunch of 1s, and this is my -6, which might be useful for figuring out the rest. To give you some time, you can check with your neighbors, see if you agree on what should the answer be here. Who would like some more time? A few people? Okay, so who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, G? Okay, so we have mostly a split between C and D. So let's talk about what's going on. So we're shifting by 2. And that's roughly equivalent to dividing by 2 to the 2, or dividing by 4. And negative 6 divided by 4 is negative 1.5. Obviously, we don't return negative 1.5 in an integer. We have to return some rounding of it. So the question is, how does this round? And if I wrote x divided by 4 in C, the result I would get would be negative 1. This is doing a shift. So let's think about what the shift does. And the shift here, we're taking our negative 6, we're removing the bottom 2 bits, those get shifted off the number, and we're shifting in a bunch of 1s because we copy the sign bits. And what we end up with is the bit pattern for negative 2. If I wanted to remember why that's negative 2, I can flip all the bits and add 1, and I can see that I get 2 when I do that. So we actually get negative 2. So we get a different answer than the divide operator in C is supposed to give. It's still division, it's just rounding differently. So questions? Yes? So the question is, does the C compiler compile a divide by 4 down to a shift? And we'll see the answer is yes, but it's more complicated. We'll have an example in a bit. A question is, because the C compiler might use division to implement So use shift to implement division, does this mean optimizations will give us different rounding? No. The divide operator in C is defined in the specification to always round towards 0. So the compiler has to make it happen no matter how it's implementing it. And we'll see how it can do that later. But So, but the preview is that if the compiler wants to use arithmetic shift to implement division, it has to fix the rounding. Does that answer your question? Yes. So the divide, the question was confused by what I meant by the compiler was rounds toward zero. The divide operator in C has to be implemented to round towards zero. So if the compiler is compiling the divide operator to code that uses a shift, it needs to still round towards zero somehow. Does that answer your question? So no matter what it compiles it down to, it has to round towards zero, even if that's extra work.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Yeah.
Can you explain again then how this goes to -2
instead of -1? How does it go to -2 instead of -1? So I figured it out by doing just the mechanical work of here's -6, and to shift by 2, I'm going to get rid of these 2 bits, and I'm going to have to replace those bits with 2 new ones. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So just the mechanical process gave me -2, and it happens to round differently. Other questions? Okay. And so, see, here we got into trouble that our division was the same except for rounding. The rounding is different. So, as I said, the compiler can deal with this. So here's an example of, yes, of the compiler implementing a divide by 8 function. So here, basically, the code I wrote is return r divided by 8, and here's the optimized code GCC did for it, which uses the arithmetic shift, but it has to fix the rounding. So to fix the rounding, what the compiler did here is it said, I'm going to compute r plus 7, and then I'm going to check if the argument is negative. And if it's negative, I'm going to use arg plus 7 instead of arg before I shift. And that's how it's going to fix the rounding. Just like, you know, if you want to change the rounding for rounding to the nearest integer, you might like add 0.5 or 0.9999. You know, this is the same idea the compiler's doing. It's adding 7 for before dividing by 8 to change the rounding to the other direction for negative numbers. And the reason this works is that C division, as I said, round towards 0. It turns out that arithmetic shift, if you think of it as division, it rounds towards negative infinity. That is, it always rounds down. So this is just changing the direction of the rounding for negative numbers by replacing the number with number plus 7 before dividing by 8. Yeah?
Is there a kind of burden to shift to go slow?
Question, is there a kind of arithmetic shift to go slow? We'll talk about left shifts next. And we'll get to that question. Okay. Other questions? Yeah? So question, this is only done on negative numbers? Arithmetic shift is only done, or?
The
adding 7 is only done by negative numbers, yes. And this assembly code I have annotated here handles that by it computes x the argument plus 7, but we only actually move it into EAX if it's negative, and that's what this C move and ask instruction does. So this is called a conditional move instruction. We'll talk about them next week, but basically, it's basically, it combines a conditional jump and a move into one instruction. Does that answer your question? Yeah?
Why is it adding 7?
Yeah. So in this case, we're dividing by 8 because we have a shift by 3. And adding 7 for dividing by 8 is like equivalent to adding like 0.9999 for like rounding to the nearest integer. Is that make sense? So we're adding the largest, we're adding something that's just less than 8, because we're dividing by 8, to make it round in the complete opposite way. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions?
Can you explain that last part one more time?
So here, I guess the way I think about it, if I told you I was rounding integer, if you gave me a decimal number, you know, with a decimal point, and I said I was rounding it down, and you wanted me to round it up, the way you might fix that is by like adding 0.9999, something like that, to the number, right? So we're applying that principle here by adding, basically, effectively adding 7/8 to the number by adding 7 before dividing by 8. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
verify. Why does the test instruction need two parameters? So the test instruction, as will does a bitwise AND. We'll talk about what a bitwise AND is later in this lecture. And bitwise AND takes two parameters. So that, oh, hopefully that will be clearer when we talk about what bitwise AND is. But other questions? Okay, so someone asked about shifts in the other direction, and yes, that's a useful thing. So adding zeros to the end of a number is multiplying. And there's a shift left operator, which is shift in the other direction. Sorry, you can't just shift right by a negative number. It's not allowed. That does that, and a corresponding SHL instruction. And there is technically an arithmetic shift left, but it's basically the same thing for everything we care about. So, you know, there's no rounding issue, and there's no issue with the sign bit in shifting left. Generally, so we don't have to have it work differently depending on whether it's signed or unsigned. Okay, and shifting left is the same as multiplying by a power of 2. Okay, so we have shifting. Now there's some other things we want to do. And going back to our problem of extracting hexadecimal digits, let's say I want to extract the second hexadecimal digit, you know, the second least significant of a value. How would I do that? And in hardware, this is super easy. I just look at these four wires. And in software, it's not so obvious. Now, I'm going to make things a bit easier. We have a strategy here. And our strategy is going to be that we take our original number. We strip off the bottom four bits. And then I somehow strip off the remaining bits. So we're just going to do it in these two steps to get just this one nibble. Question is, how can we do this? And like with what we started out, yes, there's going to be a fast way of doing this, but you know arithmetic is sufficient. And we can take advantage of, you know, our idea that this is going to be 1 times 16 to the third plus OXF, or 15 times 16 to the second, and so on, if you want to figure out what the math should be. Question back there, yes. Sorry? Oh, no, I'd like a survey for answers. So who needs, for the first part, who needs more time? Okay, so some people, okay, give me a second. Start with the first part, our first step, which is going from 1F20 or things like it and stripping off those last 4 bits. And if you already have that, make sure you know the second part. So let's do our first step here. So who thinks A, B, okay, C, D, no clue. Okay, so majority collected B, just right. So we want to, so this is equivalent to dividing by 16, is what we started out with earlier in the lecture. It is shifting by 4. So remember that this is shifting by 4. This is the same as divide by 2 to the 4, which is equal to 16, which is probably why some people were confused with A. And that moves, that shifting operation is going to move out those last 4 bits off the number, which is what we want. And it's going to add in zeros at the beginning, so they won't match, change the value. Okay, who would like needs more time for the second part? Everyone seems happy. Okay, so for the second part, who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, G, no clue. Okay, so a few no clues. A plurality said D, which is right. So why does D work? So D is, we're doing modulo, so we're taking the remainder when dividing by 16. And if we think of our representation of this number here, this is going to be 1 times 16 squared plus OXF, or 15, times 16 to the 1, plus 2 times 16 to the 0. And if I divide this by 16, everything's going to divide evenly except our last term. And our remainder is going to be 2, which is exactly what we want. And that's just because everything, the 16, and everything else, the 16, is going to cancel out evenly with the division. You know, so we're going to just decrement the power of 16 by 1, but that doesn't work for our ones place. And this is the same reason why when we divide by 10, we shift over by one decimal point. You know, and the remainder is going to be the last digit. So questions about why that works? So we get our answer here, and we could also have done this in other order. So this second version here is saying, let's extract the 2 0 and then turn it into just 0. So this is, version is OX1F20 to OX20 to OX2. This version is OX1F20 to OX1F2 to OX2. But we use modulus and might say, well, what's the instruction for modulus? And it turns out it's the divide instruction. The divide instruction both gives you the quotient and the remainder in x86. And we learn that that's slow. So we want a faster way of doing this. And we know in hardware, this is super simple. So we're going to talk about how to make that work. But first, before I move on, questions about what's going on here? These solutions. Okay. So we want to be able to manipulate individual bits that we can do in hardware. We want to expose that to software. And the common way we're going to expose that to software is that there's some simple operations we can do on bits and hardware that we're going to make easily available to the software. And these are typically going to be operations that in hardware we've done on what we call gates. So these are going to be very simple circuits that take in 2 or more bit values and produce a function of the result. So here I have, sort of as conventionally drawn circuits, 2 gates. So I have an XOR gate, which takes in 2 bits and produces a function of them. In this case, it returns 1 if exactly one of them is set to 1. And I have an AND gate, which has the function where it returns 1, has the output if exactly one of that, if both of them are 1, otherwise 0. So these are things, circuits we can build in hardware that are good for manipulating individual bits. They're very fast, very efficient, and these are going to be helpful for, you know, doing things with particular bits. You might say, so why? And we'll look at the example of this AND operation. So one of the things we wanted to do to bits is sort of like select bits. And let's see what AND does. So here's a truth table for AND. So if I AND 0 with 0, I get 0. If I AND 0 with 1, I get 0, and so on. And one way we can read this is that if I AND a value, a bit with 1, I keep the bit the same. So If I want to take a bit and do nothing to it, I can end it with 1. That doesn't seem very useful, but if I end a bit with 0, I clear the bit. So this means if I want to do an operation where I either clear a bit or set it to 0, I can end it with something which is either 0 or 1, depending on which one I'm choosing. And for manipulating bits, we're going to have this idea that we're going to construct what we call a mask, where we indicate, well, what bits do I want to keep the same and what bits do I want to clear? And then we're going to have an AND operation that uses that mask to apply our preferences on keeping and clearing bits to an entire number. And this operation is going to be called a bitwise AND. So bitwise AND is going to treat our value as an array of bits. So as an example, if we're doing 2 bitwise AND with 4, and this is how it would be represented in C, I'm going to take the number 2 and the number 4, and I'm going to take each pair of bits. So I'm going to take the 1's place, 0 ended with 0 is 0. I'm going to take the 2's place, 1 ended with 0 is 0. I'm going to take the 4's place, 0 ended with 4 is 0. Just going through each of the pairs of bits, treating these numbers I'm ending together, bitwise ending together, as arrays of bits, and applying that single operation to each thing. So a way we can read this is as take 2, keep only the 4's place, and clear all the other bits. So I can say that 4 is a mask that selects only the 4's place and says to clear all the other bits. And the bitwise AND operation applies that mask to perform that clearing some bits and keeping some bits operation. And similarly, I can read this second bitwise AND operation as take 10 and keep the 1's, 2's, and 4's place and clear all the others. And I can do that because, you know, 7 has the 1's, 2's, and 4's place set to 1, and 0 is everywhere else. So that ending with 7 is saying, keep the bottom 3 bits the same, clear everything else. And that's sort of what happens when we should apply that operation to 10. So here I have 10 in binary, so we have our 8's place, our 4's place, 2's place, our 1's place. So 10 is 8 and 1, and I have my 1's place, so I do 0 ended with 1 is 0, 1 ended with 1 is 1, 0 ended with 1 is 0, 1 ended with 0 is 0, and so on. And that's how I got 2, which is just the only all the bits in the bottom 3 places that were set in 10. So questions on bitwise AND and this interpretation as sort of instructing us to keep or set certain bits, or sort of keep or clear certain bits, keep or clear. Okay, so keeping certain bits isn't the only thing we might want to do, so we'll get to those later. Oh, yes. So we'll have some other operations we'll talk about later. So notes on how bitwise AND works. So I showed you this is the syntax in C. There's also a corresponding operation, which is AND. And I mentioned the test operation is basically like, for AND, like subtract is to compare. So test is the condition code only setting version of AND. And you might say, okay, when you were doing this by hand, you went through a lot of steps. Is this really that much more efficient? And the answer is yes, because the hardware just, you know, it can devote space to this, so rather than doing these one at a time, they do them all at the same time. They just, basically, you can set up gates for doing all the AND operations all at once across even a 64-bit number. That's pretty easy to do, and that's going to be why it's going to be fast and efficient. Even though it seems like, oh, we're doing 64 things, yes, but we're doing them all at once. So the hardware is just going to be built to do that, and that's a lot easier to do for bitwise AND than for something like division. So now that we know bitwise AND, we can use it to actually do our what we were doing with modulus before. So here, I have my operation where I take my number and I extract that second nibble again. And here I have just written out as sort of what the binary would be, but I've written out placeholders for the digits. So our D bits, first we shift by 4, that takes the D bits off the number, and we're shifting in zeros, but I'm just not writing them all. And then I bitwise AND with OXF, which has zeros excepting the bottom 4 bits. So everything but the bottom 4 bits, the C bits here, gets set to 0. So I end up with getting the C part of the original number, which is what I was looking for. Another way we could do this is I could say my first step is going to be to clear all the bits but the ones we're interested in. So I have a mask which has 1 set in that second nibble, those 4 bits 4 through 8 basically. I end with that, and that takes my number, you know, with all these bits here and keeps only the C bits. And then I shift over to move those C bits to the least significant place. So questions about how either of these solutions works and uses our bitwise AND operation. So that's, so now as I alluded to, we have bitwise AND for clearing certain bits, keeping certain bits. We also have some other bitwise operators which we can use for other tasks. So we have bitwise OR, which we can think of as keeping a bit the same or setting it, and bitwise XOR, which we can think of as keeping a bit the same or flipping it. So for example, if I bitwise OR with 7, I'm saying set the bottom, the least significant 3 bits, the 1s, 2s, and 4s place to 1, no matter what they were before, in 10. That's what that's doing. We end up with 15. If I bitwise XOR with 7, I'm saying flip the bottom 3 places, the 1s, 2s, and 4s place in 10, when I'm doing an XOR with 7. And I end up with 13 in this case. Questions on bitwise OR or XOR? This interpretation that they set or clear or flip bits, depending as select the bits we select in particular. Okay, so there's one more operator we're going to talk about, which is the complement operator, which is represented by tilde. This is just flip all the bits in a number. So it's basically the bitwise equivalent of exclamation point. That isn't exclamation point because, like, if I do exclamation point 2, that's 0. Right? Because exclamation point just says, is it true or false? It doesn't say, what is each bit? So questions on complement? Okay, so tomorrow's lab and the following homework is a bunch of bit manipulation puzzles. You're going to be solving some problem with bitwise operators, maybe something you could do with normal arithmetic comparison and so on. And you might say, why are we doing this? So one reason is that this is closer to the operations available in the hardware, so it's useful for thinking about hardware design. The other thing is I want you to make sure that we actually understand bitwise and so on. So it's helpful for understanding that. Also, it's an unreasonably common question in interviews because people think you're clever if you can do it, not that you've seen these problems before. We're going to start by going over one little example to show a general strategy that will be useful in the lab. We'll finish this example on Thursday, but we're going to start it. And this example is we're going to solve the problem of doing the ternary operator, which is, you know, if x returns y, else returns z. So that's my goal here, and I want to do this with bitwise operators, not with if-else. Like, I could easily do this with if, but we're going to avoid that. And a key strategy I want you to remember for the lab and the homework is that we can do this in simpler subproblems. So to simplify this, I'm going to start by saying, let's simplify it by trying to solve it if x, y, and z are just one bit. We're going to, later on, we're going to solve it where they're bigger, but for now, they're just one bit. And then I'm going to divide it up into even simpler problems. I'm going to say, here, you know, I have my problem. This is going to be if x, y, lc. I'm going to do some divide and conquer to say, let's solve these two subproblems. And why would that be useful? Well, the first problem is going to be if x is true, return y. The second problem is if x is false, return z. And if I OR those together, I'm going to get, if I bitwise OR these together, I'm going to get either y ORed with 0, which is the same as y, or 0 ORed with z, which is the same as z, depending on what the value of x is. So the solution to the overall problem is ORing these two things together. And this is a common thing that comes up in using bitwise operators to do problems like this, which is that I can make these two subproblems where I get 0 OR the answer, and I can make it so when I put them together with bitwise OR typically, or I could add two, I will get the final answer because, you know, only one of them will be non-zero. So in this case, only one of these will be non-zero, so we'll just OR them together or add them together to get our full answer for the whole expression. And if we look at our first part here, so this is if x, y, l0, I can write out the truth table for it, and it's bitwise AND, with assuming x and y are single bits. So I can write that as x ANDed with y. For the other one, it's just the same thing, but with x flipped. So I can flip x using our complement operator, and the same thing applies. And here's my solution. So this is, remember, only with x, y, and z being single bits, but what I did is I said, okay, first I'll get y if x is true, is 1, then I'll get z if x is 0, and I'll put them together. And if x, for the first part, that's going to be 0 if x is 0. So this solves this problem assuming x, y, and z are 0. And remember, this is if x, y, else z. So questions about why this solution works. But a little confused. Yes? No? What we're trying to do, so we're trying to make this expression, which is the same as if x, return y, else return z, using bitwise operators without using if or other conditionals. Does that answer your question? Okay. So that's known as the ternary operator. And I guess I'm out of time, so we'll finish this problem up next time.